and welcome to Rather Good Chat. And today we are discussing mathematics. We're on episode 7, which is very exciting. 7 being a number, which means it is actually mathematics. I'm Joel.
And I'm Dave.
Hi, Dave. How are you today, David?
I'm really good today, actually. Yeah. How are you doing?
I am absolutely ruddy marvellous. And by ruddy marvellous, I mean I'm a deep ruddy colour.
Right.
Of generally kind of boiled feel to my outer epidermis.
Yeah, sort of russet kind of.
Yeah, russet and shiny and swollen and, you know, like balloon-like almost. You know, like,
right.
And like a tautly stretched, you know, kind of hot,
like
red.
Yeah, like something's under real strain and pressure there, right?
Yeah, and really quite warm. Yeah.
Have you tried jabbing your cheek with a pin? See what happens?
No, I haven't. What do you think will happen?
Well, either there'll be a controlled release of whatever it is that's built up underneath your epidermis.
Sounds unlikely.
Or you'll burst.
Yeah, the bursting sounds more in keeping. What's happening with you, Dave? What's happening in Daveland today?
What's happening in Daveland? It's been
as you
incredibly
are on the land these, Dave. Would have been Dave C, wouldn't it, until you moved to the land?
Yeah.
But Daveland.
It was never my sea. The sea allowed me to briefly sit upon it.
Right.
I wouldn't claim ownership over the sea.
No, fair goes. Not since you grew legs and moved to the land.
Yes, yeah. And then I evolved them into flippers and moved back into the sea for a bit.
Right.
And then I evolved legs again and came out. You know, I just can't make up my mind.
No, I know. And I went down the butchers and got some lungs and rammed them into your thorax. And The gills are still functioning, aren't they? And still there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you are a creature of the land for now.
For now, yes. Although it has been torrential rain for the last day and a half here. So,
brilliant.
It's mostly like being underwater anyway.
Nice. Do you go and sit in a puddle and breathe in that lovely that lovely muddy water?
I just kind of splash around in a puddle for a bit, yeah.
Mm. Well, don't we all?
That's how I spend my weekends.
Don't we all?
Mm.
Yeah. So we're discussing mathematics today, David.
Yes.
Well, what do you think about maths? Good or bad? Thumbs up or down?
Oh, wow. Well, at the moment, I feel thumbs up, but I guess we'll talk about it in depth and breadth for an hour, and then maybe I'll change my mind.
So we'll be talking in a very informative and knowledgeable way about mathematics, educating the masses. And at the end of that, I suppose we'll be able to make a more informed opinion on whether maths is good or bad.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Maths, good thing or not?
Right. So what's your favourite maths?
My favourite maths is that maths where you're given a number of items. And the example I'm going to use here is going to be sweets.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to decide how to allocate that number between a number of friends.
Right.
That's great maths, that is. And I found that it's been really useful through my life in terms of sweet allocation.
Mm, yeah.
Which is one of life's core skills.
Say, for example, you've got 8 sweets.
Yes.
And no friends.
Which is, I mean, that end of the equation is a constant for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like basically I just eat all the sweets, right?
Yeah.
Crying in a darkened room. Just rocking backwards and forwards and stuffing the sweets into my face and sobbing. Which,
right,
you know,
right,
is okay because the sweets are better than friends. So why would I want any friends? If I had
That's
friends,
right,
I wouldn't
yeah.
get to eat all the sweets. I'd have to share them.
Sweets never want you to, you know, fulfilled social obligations or, you know, be nice or stop crying.
This is exactly what I explained at length to my maths teacher in school whenever she gave me any kind of question like that. And, you know, I think that's done me well. Yeah.
How did you like maths in school? Was it a favourite subject?
You know, it wasn't my least favourite subject. Actually, you know, I say that. I'm not sure if I did have a least. Did I have a least favourite subject? I think I was, you know, I think subjects were like ones that I actively liked or ones that I was a bit meh about. Mm. I think maths was probably in the meh category.
Okay.
But I wouldn't say I disliked it. You know, it was fine. Yeah.
I disliked French because I wasn't very good at it.
Right.
But now I bitterly regret not paying more attention and being able to speak French, because that'd be really cool.
Mais oui, je peux parler un peu de français parce que c'est très bien à l'école d'apprendre le français.
Non.
I did learn a bit of French at school. And I really enjoyed that. Not so much the lessons, because, you know, the lessons were just lessons, but it was when I realized that going to France, because in those days we used to do regular trips to France and exchanges and things, that it opened up a whole country, which was great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite math?
My favorite math, I think, is probably...
Singular math.
Probably multiplication.
Right, okay. Well, what, any particular multiplication?
No, no, just generally. Generally.
Just generally? I mean, that's multiplying a bit of a cop-out, if I'm honest.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Do you know what, genuinely, my favourite math, the one I enjoyed at school most, was trigonometry. I was a big fan of trigonometry.
Oh, right. Is that, trigonometry, what is that exactly? Is that when that's you've got gnomes and you have to, they...
You've
they're
got
like
to
shoot them. They pulling the triggers. Is that right?
Oh, right. No, I was thinking you have to like offend them in some
this
way.
This is where you kind of tell them that they're fictional and they get really annoyed with you.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, because you are notorious for that. I suppose that must be where your habit of telling gnomes they're fictional and then just laughing at them.
Laughing and laughing and laughing. Yeah.
Mm. Poor old gnomes. Yeah. So that's why, I mean, it's hard to see how that fits into math. Was it about how many gnomes you could trigger in one go?
Yeah, that's it. The exam questions were things like, you have three gnomes. Two of the gnomes are perfectly spherical.
Right.
And one of them has very, very strong opinions about an issue.
Right.
You have 20 minutes and a train is coming from Brighton towards you at 18 miles an hour.
Yes.
What's the square root of 7?
Right, okay. And what's the answer to that question?
Square root of 7. I should have picked a number that's easy to do a square root of that's not a fractional number, shouldn't I?
Yeah. I was, I thought it would be more along the lines of, you know, you've got 7 gnomes and what's the quickest way of making them all cry?
Right.
Yeah.
Assuming gnomes are real, the quickest way of making them cry is probably just to, I don't know, shove them in a hole.
I mean, you've already done it there, haven't you? This is you. This is classic Dave. Like, doubting the reality of the gnomes. You've immediately made them cry, regardless of the hole.
Right. That's how I trigger the gnomes. I tell them I don't believe in them. I don't validate their existence.
And this is why you got an A, isn't it? Because everybody else is busy trying to work out. This is what the fundamentals of maths, isn't it? Working out different, elaborate, and increasingly effective and efficient ways of upsetting gnomes by refusing to acknowledge the existence of the gnomes.
Mm. So I did get an A in maths.
Okay.
But I went on results day to pick them up. This is like 1,000 years ago. I'm very old.
Yeah.
And I got there, and my maths teacher was handing out the results envelopes. Yep. And she handed me my envelope, and she said to me, "What happened to that A star, eh?" Before I'd even opened it.
Oh.
So I opened it was an A. But that wasn't the best score you could get. The best score was A star. It's all numbers now, isn't it? I think.
It is all numbers now, yeah. Yeah. Which is appropriate for maths, I suppose.
But that absolutely took the wind out of my sails.
Oh. Oh, never mind. I'd blame the gnomes, you see. This is what happens. They banded together. That teacher was probably some gnomes. Pretending
she was
to
quite,
be one person.
She was quite short. She was a very short lady.
Just a gnome.
Might have just been a gnome. Yeah.
Yeah, could be. I mean, even a big gnome is very small on human scales.
Yeah, I suppose. Is there any kind of crossover on small human and big gnome? Or are gnomes too small even to like cross over with the smallest of humans?
Well, I don't know. If you had like a small person, you know, like the kind of people who on TV would get into gnome face, as it's now known, and play a gnome. You know, like Warwick Davis is still much bigger, isn't he, than a gnome, even though he's quite small for a human.
I think so, yeah. Gnomes, my experience of gnomes, and by this I mean the small ornamental variety.
You see, there you are insulting the gnomes again.
Right. They tend to be like a foot tall max, right?
Yeah, yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah. Mm.
Very into fishing.
Okay. What do they do with the fish? Do they...
Well, I assume they eat them. Maybe not. Maybe they...
Yeah, I mean...
Well, if it's a large fish, then maybe you could ride them.
Yeah, it's... okay. Because the eating sounds pretty brutal, because I've never seen a gnome with, for example, a frying pan, or like any way of dealing with the gnome, with the fish, other than just, you know, kind of in a brutal animalistic way, just tearing into it with its teeth.
Right, right. I mean,
you know what I mean?
I assume their frying pans generally stay within their secret subterranean gnome holes.
Okay.
I would have assumed. But they don't sit around in people's front gardens frying up a fish supper, do they? That'd be weird.
Okay, right, okay. Sorry, you know more about gnomes than me. I mean, it makes sense, seeing as you're so highly qualified in upsetting them.
Yes, it does, yeah, yeah.
So they live in burrows, do they? Gnome holes.
Gnome holes, yeah. Or is that hobbits? Yeah. I can't remember.
I don't think hobbits are real, are they, Dave?
Ah, I see what you've done.
What?
Yes. You've caught me. You've trapped me in a net of my own construction there.
Yeah, a metaphorical one, not a real net. The nets are all with...
No, a real one.
Right? Oh, I thought the gnomes had all the nets for the fishing.
Right, right.
Is that... Have you got caught up in a gnome net?
Oh, maybe that's it, yes. Yeah. I did wonder what all the scuttling was about and the tiny high-pitched voices giggling.
Right, they're taking their revenge on you.
I think so.
It'll be slow and ongoing for the rest of your life, probably.
Yes.
Gnome revenge is a dish best served gnome cold.
That's gnome correct.
Yes. That's how you speak gnome. Did you know that? You just add the word gnome in every now and again.
Right. I didn't know that.
You didn't gnome.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
No.
Well, that's actually really useful. We're talking about my inability to learn French.
Yes.
I should have chosen a much easier language like gnome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because a lot of people think that you can speak French just by talking English and adding the word croissant every now and again. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work.
No, it absolutely baguette doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing that you're just speaking to me in French now, baguette, even though you claim not to have learned it in school.
Yeah, no, I didn't retain any of it from school. So I'm absolutely saucisson. illiterate when it comes to French, yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
It has to be a food stuff, I assume.
Mais oignon. Oui. Yeah.
So, do you actually speak a bit of French?
Tartiflette. Yes. That was French for yes.
Ah, okay. Poisson.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do speak a bit of French. I used to be quite good at French, but I have forgotten most of it. But I can still speak a bit.
Yeah.
J'ai oublié la plupart de la langue. I've forgotten most of the language.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah, yeah. That was me saying in French that I've forgotten how to speak French. It's quite clever, isn't it?
It's very clever. It's clever and funny. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I mean, clever and funny is... Well, I was going to say it's my watchwords, but it's not my watchwords, is it? My watchwords is safety first, as we all know.
Right, yes, yeah, that's true.
Except when it comes to gnomes. With gnomes, I'm dangerously irresponsible.
How can you be irresponsible towards a gnome?
No, I didn't say towards gnomes, I said with gnomes.
Oh, right, do they lead you astray?
No, I mean in terms of the things that one can do with a gnome.
I see. Do I want to press this further, or is this best left to my imagination?
Exactly the question I asked last time I was being dangerously irresponsible with a gnome.
Right, right.
Do I want to press this further?
Or might it burst?
I was going to say what fictional creature, but obviously that's just straight gnomist. What magical and sometimes considered fictional creature is your favourite to be dangerously irresponsible with?
Oh.
And in what way?
Right. I like, is it Selkie? Is that the one that's like a horse that lives in the sea?
Are you sure you're not thinking of the seahorse?
No, you see seahorses. This is a common misconception. Seahorses are actually a sort of aquatic fish-like creature.
Right.
They might even be fish. I don't really know. But yes, they're not actually the same as horses.
I quite often see horses.
They're much smaller.
Right. I quite often see horses, and they definitely look like big land things.
Ah, no, I see what's happening here. Right.
Right.
When you see horses,
yes,
that's not the same thing as encountering a seahorse.
What?
Mm. Yeah, I know, it's tricky, isn't it? It's really tricky.
Wow. Mass is just crazy, isn't it?
It really is. I like the fact that hippopotamus means water horse.
Does it really?
Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah, no, you're right. It does, doesn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that just seems like one of those things where you're naming a creature and you just don't have quite enough words.
So is that the crazy Romans who did that?
Hippopotamus? Hippo sounds Greek, doesn't it?
Oh, right. So it's those crazy Greeks.
Probably, yeah.
Feta cheese and water horses. That's the main things Greek civilization has given us, isn't it?
Dolmades as well. Delicious.
Delicious
dolmades.
Yeah. Can you think of anything else the ancient Greeks achieved? I think that might be it, really.
Gyros, I think. That's it.
I do remember reading Homer's Iliad.
Mm.
And one of my favourite bits about the Battle of Troy was when the great hero Achilles, the manslayer, rode into battle on his hippopotamus eating a gyros.
it was pretty good, right? Yeah, it was, yeah. There's actually one more thing, and that's Spanakopita.
Some kind of helicopter?
Spanakopita, yeah. It's a helicopter made entirely of spinach.
Oh! I mean, that doesn't sound like a good idea, does it?
It's a bit flappy.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things that fly are quite flappy. Famously, birds are often flappy, aren't they? But helicopters, you want to be relatively rigid, don't you?
Presumably, you could compress and dry out the spinach down, like you do with kelp, right?
To make I do with kelp, certainly.
To make a sort of solid building material.
Uh-huh.
I expect. Yeah. And then you could construct a helicopter out of that. That'd be fine.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, that's all right.
Obviously, the rotor blades would be an octopus.
Of course. I mean, obviously. Yeah. Is that all helicopters are made of spinach?
Yeah,
I guess it must be, right?
I've never really checked them all out.
Have you ever licked a helicopter?
Never licked one. No, I've never been up in the air in a helicopter.
Don't trust the spinach to hold you up there.
No, not really. I went inside a Chinook once, which is quite exciting. As a child, we had, because I grew up next to an RAF base, so we had a village fete, and every year,
what was the fate of your village? A terrible fate.
The village fete. It was forbidden to know it. We just went and we went and solemnly thought about the village fete for a couple of hours.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
A fete is like a fair, for people who might not have heard that word.
Yeah, and a fate worse than death is a really bad one, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
The annual village fate worse than death. Always had a disappointingly small turnout.
Right, okay. Yeah, not that many enthusiasts for that kind of thing, really.
No.
Yeah, that's what's gone wrong with this country, isn't it, really?
Why are so many military helicopters named after Native American tribes?
Well, because they're American in origin. So I've flown in Chinooks. And
Great.
Yeah. It's made by Boeing. It's an American aircraft. So that's why. And it's fun flying in a Chinook. Yeah, it goes waka, 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 as you know. That's just the pilot. That's the pilot kind of
the pilot's
shouting
a Muppet,
into
it. I assume.
Yeah. And he's got like a microphone and he goes, waka, 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 waka. And they blast it. They've got these big things on the back at the sides, these big kind of tubular things. A lot of people think they're engines, but they're actually just great big speakers.
Right.
And, it's there to amplify the pilot going, waka, 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 waka. And then
the same thing's true for ambulances, isn't it?
They kind of go like that, don't they?
Yeah.
It's just the screaming of the person inside. They just put a microphone in there. That's how that works. Yeah, and inside the Chinook, there's just some, I don't know if you've ever seen, you can get bicycles a bit like this where there's a whole load of different pedals. But it's just loads of pedals all kind of with a chain into a kind of...
What do you mean bicycles with loads of pedals?
Exactly what I say.
Do you mean like a tandem? Or do you mean like
a single person
bike just with 14 pedals?
I mean a bike for many people, each of whom has a pair of pedals. But that's what it's like inside a helicopter, right? Everybody's got pedals and you all pedal furiously and it goes up to the central shaft. In a Chinook, you need two sets because there's two big rotors and everyone pedals hard and spins the fans. And if you get hungry on the way, you can eat some of the spinach. But you've got to be careful not to eat any of the structurally vital spinach, which is why helicopters are limited in range, because you don't want to fly for more than an hour or so in case somebody eats the wrong bit of the helicopter.
Someone gets a bit too peckish and
eats
the cockpit.
And also, you don't want to be up for much longer than that anyway, because the pilot can end up getting a sore throat. And if he stops being able to shout waka 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 into the microphone, then you're in trouble.
It immediately falls from the sky, doesn't it, at that point?
Yeah, nobody really understands why they've built this in, but it just stops working if you stop saying waka waka waka.
Maybe the sound encourages the octopus. Without the sound, the octopus goes, bored.
It's true, because you'd think the pedals actually rotated the octopus, but they don't. The pedals just rotate a little prodder that slaps the octopus over and over again, and the octopus spins itself.
Just so he knows his place, yeah.
Yes, it's, you know, it would fly without, to be honest, if they hadn't put these systems in, the like revolving octopus slapper and the enormous speakers that the pilot shouts waka 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 through, the whole thing would just fly anyway.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
for some reason, these extra things have been added in and everyone just accepts it as normal.
Well, it's
the reasoning
like
is lost in the mists of time.
I think it's an madness. Infrastructure thing, isn't it? Just the cost of replacing all the systems and gutting them from the helicopters would be economically unviable, wouldn't it?
Oh, I thought you meant it's like a Keynesian economics thing, as in like, you know, it's just keeping people busy to keep everything going, right?
Oh, that could be the answer too, yeah.
Oh, do you know what I think it actually is? I think what it is it's all there to keep people busy, to distract them from how implausible the whole idea that they're flying in this spinach and octopus contraption is, because they freak out if they realise that
everyone's got to have a job to do to distract them. Yeah,
because otherwise they'd realise that this is clearly nonsense that they're in the sky. Yeah,
and freak out. Right.
Yeah.
It would be pretty awful if people realised just how absurd heavier than air flight is.
Yeah,
it would all just immediately stop working.
It would. That would be the end of it. Yeah. Mm. And that's maths.
That is maths. Yes, maths.
Yeah. Maths. Yeah. Maths is the plural of math, right? So the Americans say math, but that's because they only ever do one sum at a time. So they'll do one sum and then move on to another one. Whereas in England, we say maths.
We do maths in parallel. They do it in series.
Right, yeah, because we'll like do multi-maths all at one time.
Right now, I'm multiplying a number by 4 and also adding 6 and 3 together at the same time in my head.
Wow, what did you get?
I'm not done yet.
I've been doing it for months.
Yeah. It's really inefficient doing it like this.
Still haven't worked out what the number's supposed to be that I'm multiplying. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe a couple of hours I'll have worked it out. I'll tell you. It turns out it's really inefficient to try and do multiple sums in your head at the same time.
Are you still using an octopus as an accounting aid? So all of your numbers are base 8 because you're counting on octopus tentacles. Is that?
Yes, I think. That's exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. I was just trying to. Sorry, I just got distracted trying to think up some kind of abacus octopus.
Yeah, no, I was right with you.
But nothing occurred. No.
Yeah, octabacus.
Yeah. Abticus. No,
it doesn't work, does it? But that's why in England we use base 8, right?
America, yes.
Yeah. In America they count on their fingers, which is why they use base 10.
Right.
Here we use octopuses as our counting aids. And that's why everything's in base 8.
Oh, that does make sense.
Yeah.
Base 8's not used very often, is it? Like the big ones, are.
Well, apart from everything in this country.
Well, yes, obviously everything in this country. But I mean, we have a baffling and bizarre mismatch of imperial and metric units anyway, right?
It's very strange, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Think about it.
I think Canada's the same. I think Canada has a similar thing for probably obvious historical reasons. Whenever I hear Americans talking about how, you know, they still use imperial and it's really annoying and they should upgrade, I always feel like a little bit like I have to keep quiet because we just have the worst system in the world where everything is just entirely arbitrary and random. Like distances, if you're talking long distances that you might drive a car, it's miles. But if you're running long distances, it's
cubits,
kilometers.
Right?
It's cubits.
Yeah.
And heights, we still kind of go feet and inches. Heights, if you're talking about heights of people, if you're measuring something, it's centimeters.
Nautical miles, right?
Nautical miles, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's all just insane.
Yeah.
Like we had a go at going metric back in the 70s, and we got about halfway there and went, yeah, I'll do. We're fine. We're fine with that. And it's just baffling.
It's really interesting seeing the kind of, there's a generational thing here as well, in that younger people tend to think more metrically than we do. We were kind of in a transitional generation. But I'm quite interested to watch, for example, my son, who thinks in kilometres and his sat nav is in kilometres. How I'm interested to see what happens when he collides with the British road network when he begins driving.
I hope he doesn't collide with it.
Well, yeah, hopefully not. Yeah. I mean, how his thinking works when everything is
measured. That is interesting.
In miles.
I didn't realise that. Yeah.
Like exit ramps from motorways are in hundreds of yards, not hundreds of metres and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, they're close enough that you probably wouldn't be too like freaked out, right?
Yeah, I mean, famously, a kilometre is exactly a mile, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's 1.0 miles. That's the conversion rate.
That's maths.
Yeah.
But it fluctuates with the exchange rate, doesn't it? It's like, that's why it's so, in the same way as it's so hard to work out how much a pound is worth in Europe or America.
Yeah, that's right.
Because
it's
different every time you look.
Yeah, since Brexit, it's just been, miles have just been getting shorter and shorter.
Yeah, it's mile deflation, isn't it? And I think we will all be measuring our runs in miles again soon, won't we? Because they'll be longer for the distance run in miles than in kilometres. That's going to be a day, isn't it? When the kilometre overtakes the mile.
A dark day, yeah.
Well, a dark day, a dark day for everyone who values the old British imperial way of doing things.
Mm.
You know,
does anyone else?
There'll be a lot of naysayers saying, well, we told you so. Should have stayed in the EU, mate. Kept using kilometres. But, you know, what do they know?
You're firmly pro-Brexit then, Joel.
I don't want to discuss politics on here. But let's just say that I will always measure my height in cubits.
Does anyone else use... to measure human weight, stones.
Actual literal stones.
Yes. Literal stones.
I don't,
so when I want to
weigh
myself.
The Americans don't even do that, do they? They use pounds.
They use pounds and ounces, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I mean, it's imperial, but it makes more sense than stones. That's just weird.
Why
isn't
does
it?
I was just wondering why it makes more sense. That's pound sterling, right? So a pound sterling, which is our unit of currency,
is
one
pound
weight. It's one American pound weight. Of gold, right?
Yes,
so
that's true.
One British pound coin is exactly one American pound of gold in the coin.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Rolled into a circle.
Then flattened out. Yeah.
No, you're flattened out.
Oh.
Ah. I win.
Wow. I love these roast battles we have.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it a roast battle. It's more an intellectual debate, isn't it? But you know, I mean, I think I would clock that dap as another win for Brexit. Where were we? Oh yeah, stones. So yeah, I think we might be the only people who use stones, right? I mean, I'll tell you what it is good for though. It's good for maths because it involves an awful lot of completely insane calculations.
Yes,
don't need to be done at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it? 14 pounds to a stone?
I think so.
12,
I never know. I always have to look it up. Yeah.
12 ounces in a pound or something. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think that might be right. It's something like that anyway. So, none of it makes any sense at all.
So in all official things, like the NHS, for example.
Is this the officials that the gnomes are catching?
The gnomals.
The gnomals.
I suppose, wait. If there were two of them, there'd be binomials.
Oh.
Maths.
And if they were getting married, they would do that at a binomial function.
They would, yes.
Yeah.
Jolly good. Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's very good,
isn't
it?
We are crushing this.
Aren't we? Yeah. We're maths gods.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've got no idea what any of the things we're talking about mean. But it's definitely got something to do with binomes.
I definitely know some of the words. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. But like the NHS uses kilograms to weigh people, right? So if you
I thought you were going to say the NHS uses gnomes. I was like, what do they use gnomes for? But I was thinking, well, you know, you can't be gnomist in the NHS, especially.
NHS is famously full of gnomes, isn't it? Hugely diverse in its demographics, right?
Yeah, there's gnomes all over them. You can't move for gnomes in hospital in England.
Clogging up the hallways.
Stuck in the pipes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you're trying to do open heart surgery and a gnome will drop out of the ceiling and get bunged in the aorta.
You try and shut the door for hygiene reasons, but there's a bunch of gnomes just in the way. So you're slamming the door against the gnomes.
Blood and gore gushing out of people's chest cavities and surgeons screaming, "Get these gnomes out of here, nurse!" And then they realise the nurse is another gnome. Like, it's crazy, isn't it? And that's when they have to get the anaesthetist has to grab his kind of big needles and start running around trying to jab all the gnomes with the anaesthetist needles to knock them out so that they can get on with the surgery. And then the patient wakes up because the anaesthetist's too busy trying to sedate all the gnomes and they start screaming. And oh God, then the gnomes take cover because the screaming scares them and they jump into the opened up thorax and they sew themselves in to escape from the screaming. And the screaming gets worse and a parent jumps up and runs out. And that is why the waiting lists in the NHS are such a mess.
That happens 100 times a day. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace.
In
job.
Every operating room in the country.
Yeah.
It's awful. We need to do something about the gnomes.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not believing in them would be a good start.
Well, I'm beginning to come round to your way of thinking about this.
They're a menace, Joel. They're a menace.
I think if we'd been taught at school to be harsher to the gnomes, then it would save a lot of lives and a lot of suffering.
Yeah, yeah. There hasn't been a successful operation in about 20 years, has there?
No, it's just gnomes.
Yeah.
Everybody just comes out full of gnomes. You go in for the most basic consultation where, you know, you're worried that you might be, you know, you might have got a bruise on your shin and you come out just stuffed full of gnomes. Bursting out of these multiple body cavities where they've been inserted.
Yeah.
You know, they've run in there, they've burrowed in, they've jumped in, they've opened you up and climbed in and stitched themselves inside.
The smaller ones are forcing themselves in any face hole they can find.
You've got micro gnomes kind of eating their way through your skin, trying to get into your bloodstream.
Gnomes are horrible, aren't they?
Ah, they're awful things.
Yeah.
They should stick to fishing. Everything was all right when we just kept them in the garden fishing, right?
Is garden gnomes an internationally recognised thing? Or is this baffling?
I've got no idea.
No idea. So, there's a tradition of...
I know they've got them in Australia because Bluey had gnomes, right?
Oh, that's true. Actually, yeah, yeah. Is it just Commonwealth then?
Maybe. I mean, Australia's basically just like England, but better, isn't it?
Yeah, England, but much nicer weather and much more murderous animals.
Yeah.
Basically.
And the gnomes are a bit more under control there.
A little bit.
I bet it's because of the crocodiles, right?
Well, if you're a gnome, right? Mm. Imagine the amount of Australian animals that are instantly fatal to human life, right?
Yeah, which imagine is if most of them.
Most of them. Now, if you imagine the size of a gnome, there must then proportionally be...
It's all of them.
All of them, basically.
Yeah.
Must be rubbish to be a gnome in Australia. Maybe that's how we could sort out the NHS gnome problem, is by deporting them all to Australia.
Release the crocodiles.
Just release. If we fill all the hospitals with Australian crocodiles.
Yeah, yeah. Big salties. Big saltwater crocodiles. Yeah.
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it? That would solve all the problems.
Okay. Well, after the coup, right, when we're in charge, job one, release crocodiles in all the hospitals.
Yeah, we'll fill up a load of Chinooks with crocodiles from Australia.
Yeah.
We'll fly them over and just dump them into
We'll have to fly them over in short hops because you're going to try and fly all the way from Australia to Britain, someone's going to eat the spinach or, you know, your pilot's going to get hoarse and the thing's going to drop out of the sky.
He's going to get hoarse.
He's going to get a horse. Which horse are we talking about now? I've got very confused about horses in the course of this conversation.
Right. In the horse of this conversation.
In the horse of this horse conversation.
The course of this conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're talking about, what was that famous horse that got kidnapped?
Jeff
Horseman.
Horsey Jeff. No, it was Shergar. Right?
Shergar. Am I right in thinking Shergar didn't survive the kidnapping process? Is that right?
I don't think he ever was found, was he?
Just disappeared.
He just disappeared. Yeah. I reckon the gnomes got him.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably burrowed into him and made him into the gnome palace.
Do they do that? Is that what they do once you're hollow?
I assume so.
Wow. They do that to people as well, or just horses?
Large people, yeah. Yeah.
Is that why you don't see horses anymore?
That's one of the reasons, yeah.
When I was a kid, there were horses everywhere.
Literally everywhere.
Yeah, you couldn't move for horses.
Yeah, I remember, it was always tough when I was a kid to get to school on time because you'd wake up, you'd have to push the horses off your bed.
Yeah.
You'd have to get them out of the way of the wardrobe so you can get dressed and then into the hallway, and it was just wall-to-wall horses. You'd have to sort of shoulder barge your way through. And it was basically like that all the way to school. And then when you got to school, it was entirely packed from floor to ceiling with horses.
Yeah, it was awful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I remember now, you remember in, I don't know, it must have been about 1983, there were two things, weren't there? Thatcher stopped giving us milk at school, and she introduced gnomes to deal with the horses. Remember?
I do remember. That's where the gnomes came from. You're right.
It's a bit like cane toads in Australia, isn't it? They just got out of control.
Well, the gnomes came from Australia, didn't they? Where the local wildlife kept their population under control.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And then, they shipped them over here. And then disaster. I mean, at least we don't have...
a disaster.
We don't have all those horses anymore, which is quite good.
That's why the gnomes have all got Australian accent, isn't it? You're like, g'day, mate! And then kind of leap on you and start burrowing into your stomach.
Struth, they'll say as they burrow.
You're flaming galah! Yeah. I mean, any Australian listeners will recognise that we speak fluent Australian.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
It's because of our prolonged exposure to gnomes.
You have lived in Australia, haven't you?
I have lived in Australia, yeah, yeah.
Was it nice?
Yeah, it's lovely. No trouble with gnomes or horses.
Right, right.
Yeah, my face fell off just after I got there.
Right. It fell off.
Which is slightly unfortunate. It's a very pommy thing to do. I got there, it was December.
Oh, right, right.
So I was kind of white as a sheet. I hadn't seen the sunlight in months. And it was midsummer there, and I sat on a nice, cool, breezy seaside park just for the afternoon the first day I got there. Mm. It didn't feel particularly hot because of the lovely sea breeze coming in.
Oh.
And I realised when I got back to where I was staying that I was horrifically burned, and then all the skin came off my face.
That is the most English thing to do in Australia, isn't it?
It's so, like, you bloody pommy idiot. And they were, you know, everybody, I knew everybody was thinking that. Some people said
yeah,
that.
Absolutely.
And they were right. That was the worst thing, is I knew it. Because it was my face, there was nothing I could do to hide it. You know, so yeah, it was really, that was a bad, bad thing.
My partner also used to live in Australia, and she said the worst sunburn she's ever seen was an English guy. They were on a bus, I think it was, and there was a guy who hadn't got any shoes on and was just sitting there with his seat up, and his feet were just nothing but bright red blisters all over. Absolutely cooked his feet in the sun.
Wrecked his feet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, same thing, right? Everyone just knowing
Call me idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Oh, well, I learned a valuable lesson. Didn't happen again.
Right. Really? You
know, yeah. Had to. The worst thing is I completely slathered myself in after sun thinking that might help, and it just kind of made all the burns and falling off skin really moist and kind of...
Ugh.
Yeah, it was horrid.
Yeah, too little too late by that point, I guess.
Too much too late.
Right, right, yeah. Right.
Just made it all much worse. Anyway, there you go. Mm. Never mind. But I didn't get eaten by a gnome or squished by horses.
Right. Well, and, that's...
you know, coming from the benighted isle which we inhabit,
yeah,
that was a really refreshing change.
Yeah, bearing in mind I'm coming from a place where it's just been raining constantly for a day and a half. Like,
yeah,
driving rain. I quite, yeah, like the idea of going somewhere sunny. Australia sounds, yeah, nice.
Australia's lovely. Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
And I fit right in with my amazing ability to do an Australian accent. So it'd be great.
Yeah, and also you're in great physical shape. So you get yourself down to Bondi Beach where all the beautiful people are.
Yeah, and viewers might not know what I look like, but it's basically very, very muscled, very toned, and the sort of incredibly healthy kind of bronzed skin tone. Yeah.
That wasn't how I was going to describe you, Dave.
Oh, really?
I mean, yeah.
Were you possibly going to say I look like a pale, skinny, middle-aged
No, I wasn't.
English
I wasn't
man.
Going to say that. No, I wasn't going to say that.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No.
Because that was going to say... That would be incorrect. Yeah.
I was going to say, imagine a single rice noodle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then imagine it's sentient.
And that's, right.
Yeah, right. And then you're basically right. There, right?
You're basically there. Yeah, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not able to move or experience the world in any way. It's just a noodle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it has no ability to animate itself or...
No, of course not.
Just trapped, just a consciousness trapped within a noodle.
Although bafflingly able to speak, I'm not quite sure how you're throwing the thoughts out into some kind of vocalization, but it somehow it works, right? Vibrating the air.
Yeah,
through some kind
I vibrate my noodle.
You vibrate your noodle.
Yeah,
just off to vibrate the noodle. He says with raised eyebrows as he shuffles out of the door.
Yeah.
How is vibrating your noodle going for you?
Oh, pretty well, yeah, yeah.
How would you describe the experience? Is it pleasurable?
Well, I'm not really. I don't really have any kind of sensation, so pleasure is
right.
Sort of a abstract concept to me.
Right. So you're one of the lucky things about your kind of situation, right? Mm. Is there are two things about it which render you immune to gnomery, right?
Right.
One of which is the fact that you're just a noodle means that they've got very limited opportunities for burrowing into you.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second one being that if they did, they would very quickly encounter your nightmarish thorax. And that would be the last you saw of them, right?
It would be.
Not necessarily the last you'd hear of them, because the screaming of everybody who's ever ended up sucked into that thorax kind of every now and again will echo around the room in a ghostly kind of way coming from no one identifiable spot. But you certainly won't have to worry about the gnomes burrowing into you like a normal person.
Well, no, I'm pretty much immune to burrowing. The only problem is they do tend to use me as a fishing line quite a lot.
Ah. Or bait.
Yeah, I'd make quite good bait, actually, wouldn't I?
Yeah, because you're regularly devoured by a fish, aren't you?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, yeah. I go through so many fish.
You go through a lot of fish. Luckily, you just come out as you went in.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody's quite worked out why, given that you're a noodle. But, you know, somehow it works.
Everyone knows fish can't digest noodles.
That's a fish fact.
Yeah, you should never feed a fish a noodle.
And that's maths.
It is. That is exactly maths, yes.
Mathematically proven to be true. What happens if you do feed a fish a noodle?
It bursts.
This is the nursery rhyme, the playground rhyme, rather, that we all learnt at school, isn't it?
Feed a fish a noodle.
last thing you should doodle. Yes, sorry, as you say, that's the playground rhyme, isn't it? It goes, feed a fish a noodle is the last thing you should doodle. Never, never, never do it. If you do, you'll die.
Yeah.
We all learned that at school, didn't we?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There was a dance that went with it as well.
Yeah. And it's all to do with the fish bursting, isn't it? Like you say, like if people think of it as just like a benign balloon pop, but it's really not. It's more like a kind of megaton airburst.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's absolutely huge destruction.
Absurdly destructive, yeah.
Yeah, massive annihilation.
Do you remember when that container ship full of cooked noodles sunk in the Atlantic?
Yeah, Jesus, it was literally the end of the world, wasn't it?
Wasn't it? Yeah, half the planet was just blown off into space. Instantly.
Yeah. That's why the Earth now is that kind of bowl shape. Originally, it was a sphere.
Yeah, it's hard to remember now, isn't it? But it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember when the world was a sphere? Gah.
Yeah. I mean, kids today, they just think it's nonsense, don't they? But it really was.
Yeah. As they cling to the shattered husk of our ruined planet. They just think it's normal.
Yeah, careening through space on this. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Mm. Full of gnomes.
Full of gnomes and gnome horses. Yeah.
I think that's where the gnomes, how the gnomes got out originally, isn't
it? Oh, right. You know, they all lived beneath the crust.
They were trapped beneath the crust. Yeah. We shattered it with that noodle bomb.
Yeah. Turns out Hollow Earth theory was right.
Yeah. It's surprising they allow you to continue to exist, really, isn't it? Because noodles were banned long, long ago.
Oh, yeah. Under pain of instant mulching.
Mm. Yeah. And a lot of people got mulched.
A lot. Yeah, anyone that's even slightly like a noodle was mulched. Yeah. In the great noodle pogroms, yeah.
Yeah, people were just denouncing their neighbours, weren't they?
Yeah, it was awful.
He's a noodle! And like immediately chuck him in the mulcher.
I'm not a noodle. I'm not.
Yeah. Too late, mulch.
So they mulched them all, and then even that wasn't safe enough because some of the mulch might have ended up in the sea. So they sealed all the mulch inside an enormous cannonball and shot it directly into the sun.
Really hard to do that.
It is, isn't it? Yes, it is. Reaching the sun's incredibly hard. You think it'd be
easy. Even though it's downhill.
You think you just point your spaceship at the sun and go forward until you're at the sun. But like, because it's about relativity, right? Your point of where you're leaving is from Earth. And so you are traveling parallel to the sun very, very fast. So you don't have to just, you don't just leave Earth and point at the sun and go to there. Because when you leave Earth, you're traveling at the same speed as Earth, which is going parallel to the sun. It's like exactly 90 degrees from where you want to be. So in order to get to the sun, you've got to expend a huge amount of effort to change your trajectory into one that might eventually spiral into it.
Well, the thing is, you've got to slow down, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you don't fire your rocket towards the sun. You reverse. You come off the Earth. You want to fire your rocket in the direction opposite the direction the Earth is rotating around the sun. Mm. That'll slow you down, so you drop. Because everybody knows the sun is downhill, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you want to do is decelerate your whizzing around the sun until you drop into it. You don't need to aim at the sun. You just need to slow down and fall.
Yeah.
But we're going really fast. Like one of the interesting things about maths is that it takes more energy to decelerate yourself, your orbital speed around the sun to the point where you'll fall into it. That takes more energy than accelerating, which is going in the same direction as the Earth is revolving around the sun, until you reach a high enough speed to escape the sun's influence altogether, which is escape velocity.
Right,
So it's easier to reach for distant stars than it is to reach our own star. Because once you've escaped the sun, obviously you'll just keep going until you are captured by something else.
Like a big net.
But you didn't know that, people out in the world, that it's easier to get to distant stars than our own star. Although, obviously, that's only partially true.
Cause it's
not the same thing in that you're not talking about actually reaching the star, you're talking about getting to that solar system. which is on this solar system, we're talking about hitting the star, and those are different things. But anyway, you see what I mean. Escape velocity is easier to achieve than getting to the sun.
That is vaguely related to maths.
It is maths. You
could say it is tangentially related.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Because that's the direction you're going when you...
Yeah, yeah. Because a tangent is what you are, like a brown gentleman.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Who's
yeah.
been in the sun for a long time. And we all know that the sun is made of maths.
That's where all maths comes from, isn't it, the sun?
Yeah, it's true. Like all things on Earth.
Yeah, yeah. Maths and numbers themselves are fused. They're fused together in the heart of the sun.
The only original number is, well, there were two. There were the numbers 0 and 1, and all other numbers are forged together in the cores of stars until they're kind of squished into higher numbers, and then the really big numbers are only made in supernovae.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's 0 and 1, and also 38.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so we capture heat, light, and maths that kind of hit the Earth from the sun. And that's where all numbers come from.
Well, it's why we should really be careful about how much we use the number 8.
Right.
Because it only comes from the sun. It's like helium, right? Our resources of 8 on this planet are limited.
Mm.
And there's no way to get more other than wait for the sun to eject them.
It's true. Also, it's why you can't add numbers together if you're wearing sunglasses.
That is true. I've noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, because they block your access to maths.
You can't do math at night as well.
That's true. Nobody's ever done any kind of sum.
Well, I mean, you can do a little bit of maths gets reflected by the moon. A little bit.
Well, it depends on the night, right? There are quite bright.
Yeah.
It depends on cloud cover.
It depends on, you know, the month and your latitude and all these kind of things.
What's your latitude today?
My latitude? I've got a bad latitude.
Yeah. You got a famously bad latitude, haven't you?
Yeah.
I've got a positive mental latitude.
Oh, good. That's excellent. Which makes you Northern Hemisphere, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's why, because you're Australian, so you've got a negative latitude. That's,
Yeah.
And negative is bad, right? So,
yes.
As in maths, we know that any negative number is evil. So, like, -2 is quite evil. But, like, -19, you're up there with the greatest villains of history, right?
-150 is just unimaginably evil. Oh, God, don't even mention that.
Yeah. I think you've just broken the law by just mentioning that.
Oh, man.
Right?
No, I can't have any heat on me. I can't break the law. They'll see I'm a noodle.
They will. And then you're done for.
I've got to keep a low profile, which is quite easy when you're a noodle.
Yeah. I mean, I think you'll be all right, though, because they'll try and mulch you and just immediately either see or, even worse, touch your thorax. And that'll be the end of them. To be honest, that's how you've escaped the mulcher to this day, isn't it? If I'm honest,
there are already a few mulches in my torso.
In my thorax.
Yeah.
Do they ever meet any of the other sentient things in there?
Oh, presumably.
Anything ever get mulched in there?
Who knows? Presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the manifold manifolds in there, it seems unlikely that any two things that ever disappear into your thorax will ever meet each other.
Well, I mean, time and space don't really apply in there, do they?
No, that's true. Because they're there forever, all possible things that could happen will inevitably happen to them.
Yeah. That's not true, though, is it? Like, that's not how infinity works. You can have...
But it is how your thorax works, though, right?
Yes, it is, yes. It's exactly how the thorax works, yeah.
Infinity is maths, right?
Yes, I suppose it is, yeah.
Sorry.
I like the fact that zero as a mathematical concept, as a number, considering a lack of things as a number in itself, is quite a recent invention, right?
Yeah, surprisingly only a few thousand recent, years old, isn't it? Yeah.
That's amazing. Like it seems incredibly obvious, but it wasn't. Right? It took a long time for thinky folk to, as I think they were called,
I think so.
To come up with that idea. And it's so powerful, such a useful thing.
Yeah, it's true. Until, like, up until Victorian times, if you looked anywhere, there would always be a thing, right?
Right.
There was never the gaping void that we have now.
Yeah, since half the Earth got exploded into space.
Yeah, but also just, you know, as soon as the concept of zero, it did unleash the void, right? Which I guess most people would consider a bad thing, that the void is just there all the time now.
Yeah, just on the edge of vision all the time. Looming.
Just, you know, with the kind of...
calling to
every
us.
Every time you notice it, kind of reminding you about the inevitability, finality of death.
What I don't understand about maths is Roman numerals, right? I do understand Roman numerals. They're very simple. But the thing about Roman numerals is they're not...
Why don't we use them now? And I agree. I thought Brexit would bring back Roman numerals. And I think it's an absolute disgrace that somehow they failed us on that.
Why would you think that Brexit would enable us to use a inherently European numeric system?
No, I'm not talking about those dirty European ones. I'm talking about the ones we used in the British Roman Empire.
Good, honest British Roman numerals. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The ones we used in, you know, Colchester in the year 123,
right,
as that documentary had.
The year I.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Sorry, you were going to tell me something about them anyway.
The fascinating thing about them is it's not a numeric system that's designed for maths, right? It's extremely hard to do math with Roman numerals. They're not built for it. And like, how did such an incredibly successful civilization that existed for thousands of years, how did they get by? They must have had another system for actually like doing maths.
They used octopuses, right? That's how you do maths.
Right.
With an octopus.
You just ask the octopus.
No, you don't ask the octopus.
What's the square root of 7, octopus? And he says,
no.
I don't know, something like 2.6, I don't know.
No, you use his legs. You use his legs to count with.
Right.
And then, you know, like if you tweak the suckers, then little numbers pop up in his eyeballs. He goes, ka-ching, and he hits the answer.
I think you've confused octopuses, abacuses, and old-fashioned cash registers.
Really?
I think they're three different things.
No. You've just used three words for the same thing, right?
Right.
You know, like swine flesh and pork.
Yeah.
Both refer to the same meat.
And pig bits.
Pig bits, yeah. And naughty snacks.
Hog lumps.
Yeah, all the same stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I love a good dinner of hog lumps.
Hog lumps would be a good, like, affectionate pet name for a partner, wouldn't it? Come here, hog lumps.
Yeah, as swine flesh would.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Give us a kiss, swine flesh.
I'm leaving you.
Yeah. And that again is maths.
Yeah, that was some really good maths, actually. I think we did.
Yeah, thank you.
Did we solve all the maths problems quickly? Can you solve Fermat's last theorem?
Yeah. Yes.
What's the answer?
Hog lumps.
Perfect. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the square root of 7?
Octopus.
Correct. What is?
Hang on. Is there anything with a square root?
What, some kind of plant?
Yeah, like carrots can be all sorts of hilarious shapes, but they're all vaguely conical, right?
If you can grow a melon into a cube, you can grow some kind of root vegetable into a square, I'm sure.
You can grow a man into a cube.
A melon into a cube.
Which man have you grown into a cube?
Cubey Jim.
Cubey Jim. He's very cubey, isn't he?
Isn't he? Yeah, yeah.
He's the one that you abducted as a newborn and brew in a glass cube, right?
That's right, yeah.
Shoved him in an aquarium, in a fish tank.
Yeah.
And grew him in there. Yeah.
Fed him on nothing but noodles. As a sentient noodle, that's one of the worst things you can do.
He thanks you for it now, though, doesn't he, Kibi Jim?
Well, I mean, he screams a lot, but I assume that's how he expresses thanks.
He's unnaturally stable on slopes, right? You can put him on an incline that any normal human would just fall off.
You're right.
And slide down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's really grateful for that.
I think he is, yeah.
All the suffering has been worth it for that, I think.
Definitely has, yeah.
It's a great gift you've given him, Dave.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That means a lot. I've been waiting to hear that for a long time. You know?
Yeah.
Because most people just tell me it's monstrous and I'm a monster and how could you do such an evil thing?
And you just ride off laughing on your water horse, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Taunting the fish with my noodly body.
Yeah.
So is that all of maths? Have we covered all of maths?
I'm just trying to think if there's any maths we have. Oh, no, you were going to tell me something about infinity, weren't you? And how you didn't think that it meant that any possible event must happen.
Yes, yeah. I mean, because if you had an infinite amount of time, right?
Yes.
And an infinite amount of monkeys.
Yeah.
The argument is that they would eventually come up with the complete works of Shakespeare. Oh, they'd have to have typewriters too, obviously.
Yes.
But that's not true. Like, they could spend...
I think the typewriters is nonsense, to be honest. You'd probably give them some kind of touchpad.
It would save time, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
I don't think it's...
They wouldn't have to also randomly change the ribbon and feed paper in.
It's really hard. Yeah.
But isn't it true that they could spend all of infinity just all pressing the S key? Right? It doesn't follow that they would have to do every possible combination of things that are possible. They could just, like, sit there for it.
Well, I think the nature of infinity is at the root of some really difficult to grasp concepts, right? But the fact is that infinity is quite... Like, it implies literal infinity, right? So that means that all possible things must happen.
But does it?
Well, this is...
I suppose if you're getting into, like, quantum... quantum mechanics, I suppose, maybe.
Anything
but we're not talking about, like, a realistic situation, are we? The monkeys and
it's bigger than you've just described as well, though, because not only must every possible outcome happen... But every possible outcome must happen an infinite number of times, because any infinity must contain within it infinite other infinities.
Right.
Like, mathematically, you can have big infinities and small infinities.
Yes, of course you can. Yeah. Like,
but
like that. That's the same. That's like there are infinite numbers, and there are infinite even numbers. Right.
Yes.
And the set of infinite even numbers fits inside the set of infinite numbers, but they
yes,
are
it's
both,
half as big, isn't it? Infinite. Minus zero.
Yeah,
yeah. But yes, like an infinity must contain within it infinite other infinities. So, yeah. So that whole like, you know, the whole idea that multiverses fracture every
have
time.
You, have you ever
quantum
read?
Event could go two ways.
Have you ever read or heard of I think it's a novella. I don't think it's by Borges, the Library of Babel.
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, so this is a short story, I think. And the idea is it takes place in a universe that is a library,
mm-hmm.
which consists of countless identical hexagonal rooms linked together with a stairwell going up to the next floor and a stairwell going down and a door to the next room. And four of the walls are covered with bookshelves, and they each contain a set number of 400-page books with a unique combination of, I think it's like 26, the 26 letters of the alphabet. Oh, no, it's something like 25 letters in a space or something. It doesn't matter. But the whole book is 400 pages filled with dense text, which is entirely randomly generated, but unique.
Mm-hmm.
And the library is the size it takes to contain every possible derivation of book in that library.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is about people who live in this library and Because this library contains all the knowledge in the world. It contains the answers to every question you could possibly ask. It contains the cure to every disease. It contains the answer to every physics mystery. It contains a map. It presumably contains at some point an index, a usable index of every book in the library that you could use to work it out. But all this information is maddeningly meaningless because it also contains an infinite, well, not an infinite, but a very large amount of books that are wrong, right?
Yes.
So there will be somewhere in that library an index of the library. There'll also be millions of other books that contain an incorrect index of the library. Or for every answer you can get, there'll be uncountable wrong answers.
Yes.
So the maddening nature of this is that all the information you could ever need is here in this library. And the stories about people who spend their whole life traveling the library and different ways of dealing with that. So there's a faction who travel the library, burning all the books that are clearly just gibberish in order to thin it down. But the point of it is, it's all absurd anyway, because there's no way that amount of information, every possible derivation of information, renders everything within it useless. Because you can never know. I just thought that's interesting, right? That's all I've got to say.
And your maths point here is that infinity is thumbs down, right?
Yes, infinity, thumbs down. Don't like it.
So I guess, are we coming to the end now? Do we need to reach a conclusion?
We are. Yes, we do. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So our starting question, and I feel like maybe this should be a format for our podcast in general, our discussion in general, is thumbs up or thumbs down? So maths.
Well, I started out by saying thumbs up.
Yeah.
And I have to say, absolute thumbs down now. 100%. Yeah.
We should be better off without it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm of the same opinion. Maths, thumbs down, never done and is any good. I think we should get rid of it.
Yeah.
Great.
Totally agree.
That's
excellent.
Solved.
All right.
Yeah. Brilliant. Maths is solved.
Hooray.
Yes. What do we want to talk about next, David?
Well, that's interesting. What's the last? We did folklore and we've done maths. What about gases? Yeah, I know loads about gases.
Yeah, I know loads of gases.
Yeah.
I know.
Ask me to name a gas.
Name a gas, Dave.
Don't know. No idea.
Okay.
I don't know anything about gases. I was lying.
Well, you better gen up because we've got a podcast to do about gases.
All right, I will.
It has to be informative.
I'll learn all the facts about gases for next time.
You'll learn all the gases, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, what gases are there? There's squirt gas, there's balloon gas, there's fart gas, there's burp gas, there's gas 3.
We should save all this because this is absolutely gold.
Isn't it? Yeah, which is not a gas.
Not a gas.
Not a gas. Okay, brilliant. All right. We'll see you next time, Dave. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.